Welcome to Professional Learning, the podcast that's all about sparking courageous exploration. Each week, we'll be diving into a range of topics to prepare and embed our Book of Dreams work. We'll be exploring the skills and strategies in order to implement these ideas. So I'm super excited for today's episode of the podcast. I'm talking to Rachel Collinson, designated safeguarding lead for secondary campus, and Nicole Ferguson, designated safeguarding lead for primary campus, and also assisted principal for students. Hello, both of you. Great to have you here on the podcast. Nicole, how are you doing today?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's nice to see Rachel as well.
Oh, it's great to have you both here. Have either of you ever been on a podcast before?
No. Never. No.
Rachel, do you listen to podcasts at all?
I do. I listen to a lot of podcasts, yeah. Not the ones linked to education.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a great way to, you know, sort of escape and have a bit of downtime. You know, people used to watch TV, but we tend to watch less TV these days. We watch more things on YouTube and on demand, but also we listen to more and more podcasts. If I asked you, either of you, what your favorite podcast is, non-work podcast, what would you say?
Now I'm trying to think of some names. On the spot. I've got a few that I do with the children, and I can't think of what the name is, but there's one that the children particularly like, and it's where you have like debates over sort of things like Lego v Minecraft, or, you know, how dangerous is the mosquito and things like that. Oh. Like enjoying those with the children. Yeah.
Oh, I see. I love those conversations with children where it really gets them thinking about different things in a slightly different way. Rachel, how about you?
So mine are more linked to my subject areas rather than my role in school. So I'm a psychology, sociology teacher as well. And my favourite podcast has got a weird name. It's My Favourite Murder, but it's two women who look back at historical murders and they look at the sort of psychology behind them. And it's, yeah, so that's currently top of my podcast playlist. A weird name, but a great podcast.
Well, there we are. Nicole's listening to Lego podcasts and Rachel's talking about murder. So there we go. At least we understand the pair of you now. I'm only kidding, of course. Okay, so more importantly, today we're talking about safeguarding. I'd love to understand a little bit about each of your backgrounds. Nicole, do you want to go first? Just tell us a bit about your background at Alice Smith, or maybe before Alice Smith, how you got into working in the world of safeguarding in the first place.
Thank you. So I've been at Alice Smith for, this is my fourth year now. And before that, I was in the Middle East for 16 years. And if I go right the way back to where I started my career after university, I was actually in the police. So this is sort of an area that I've always been passionate about and always been interested in. And I think I went into teaching really because I wanted to be working with children, with people, and feeling that you could make a difference in that way. So I think for me, it's always been on the cards. I would probably end up working in this sort of area in school. And I can honestly say that now that I'm here and doing that, I just love it. It's so rewarding. And, you know, working with everybody, the adults, the children, the families, different people in the community. Yeah, you really feel like you're having an impact on people's lives, and hopefully always in a positive way. So yeah, very rewarding.
No, that's great to hear, Nicole. It's great to hear your background, but great to understand, you know, what it is about the work that you enjoy so much. Rachel, how about you? I imagine there's probably some similarities there as well.
Yeah, an alarming amount of similarities, actually. So when I first left university, all my parents, all three of my parents were teachers. I was adamant I wasn't going to be a teacher. And I wanted to be a probation officer, actually. And so I worked in Doncaster Prison for quite a while for a charity called Partners of Prisoners. And it was about supporting the family members of the men who were in that prison. So we're either taking them through, being with them in the prison on family days, supporting them on release days. But a big part of my role was working with the children. And I think that really got me thinking about whether or not I actually wanted to be a probation officer. I realised I didn't, because it was the family side of things, and especially the children, that I enjoyed working with the most, rather than the prisoners. And so, yeah, I started as a cover teacher in a school, secondary school, inner city school, and it was challenging, but I loved it. And then obviously as my career has progressed, it was those children who were experiencing a hard time in life that I got the most fulfillment from right back from being in the prison to working in those challenging schools. And I think that's what's led me to the DSL role today, is that sort of progression. It's interesting looking back actually and seeing how it has progressed. I hadn't realised there was such a link, but apparently, the career has been heading in this direction for quite a while.
Now, it's interesting that you both come from originally from non-school environments, but both excellent training grounds for safeguarding in school. Quite gritty backgrounds as well, if I can say that. So it's really quite interesting to hear all of that. Okay, so safeguarding in school. I mean, to me, it strikes me that it's one of those things that's a real shame that we need to have it, but I'm very thankful, and lots of people are very thankful that we do actually have it. But just tell us a little bit, for people who are listening, what safeguarding actually is, and especially in an educational setting.
Okay, so safeguarding in general is about protecting our entire community. So for example, making sure that everyone's got lanyards on, making sure so that students know who the adults are that they're interacting with, making sure that sites are secure. So right before this podcast, for example, we've done a walk of our site to make sure that cupboards are locked, entranceways are secure, we've got the right signage up, making sure that those regular checks happen, as well as training any member of staff that comes onto site. So the overarching safeguarding in school is about protecting all children and keeping them safe on a day-to-day basis. And then there's a niche of that that myself and Nicole specifically work in, which is the child protection side of things, which is once we know a child is vulnerable or at risk, putting strategies in place to be able to support that child. So it's a two-pronged approach. You've got your wider view, which is all about making sure that every child has the opportunity to flourish while in school by being in that secure environment. And then you've got your smaller offshoot of that, which is obviously crucially important, where we really protect those young children that we know to be either at harm or at risk of harm.
Gosh, okay, so major responsibility going on there. That's in the in the secondary location, of course. Nicole, just tell us a little bit about safeguarding within the primary context.
Yeah, I think, you know, we very much try and work together in our outlook and everything that we do. You know, Rachel and I work very closely together. But, you know, just echoing what Rachel has said, safeguarding in school, you know, if you think about it, the children spend most of their time with us in school. And I think it's clear to say that sort of over the last 10, 15 years, safeguarding in schools has become far more high profile for many different reasons. So I think it's only right and fair that, you know, teachers that are working with students are best placed to really sort of start to notice things and see things and are able to keep them safe. And I think it goes a little bit wider as well. You know, looking at the role is by keeping the children safe, we're also thinking very much about the adults as well and how we work with them. I know that Rachel and I are sort of doing a lot of work this year with, you know, families as a whole unit, and also with our teaching staff as well, you know, our team that work on site. So, you know, bringing them along and because safeguarding at our school is very much every single person's responsibility that comes onto site, whether they're a contractor, a parent, a visitor, a teacher, we need everybody to be saying and believing in the same thing. So it really is everything that we're doing collectively, and that Rachel and I have the privilege at the moment of driving, yeah, to make sure that we're just keeping everybody safe. But, and, you know, in particular, the children.
And you mentioned that it's become more high profile. I think a lot of people would agree with that, of course. Then do you think that that's because we have more of an awareness of the need for protecting children? Or is it, I'm saying this with a small chill on my skin, because we hear some horror stories of things that happened in schools in the 60s, 70s, 80s as well?
Yeah, I think there's much bigger awareness around areas of abuse. Society has changed, and, you know, Rachel will probably be able to talk about this for hours, you know, with her sociology and psychology background. But society has changed. We live in a different world. What the children are exposed to, how people parent, you know, being able to move around the world, not living with families. There's so many things, you know, the online, the digital world, so many things that have changed for the children that are in our care these days. And I think that schools have, you know, really risen to that challenge, that so much more time and attention is given to safeguarding these days. And, you know, when I look back at when I first started school, as in teaching, I think it was, my recollection of safeguarding when I started my teaching journey was very, probably quite low profile. Whereas now, you know, we're surrounded by it. And I think it's really, really important.
And you mentioned, of course, about what children are exposed to, you know, in particular things online. And clearly that is something that's different to life in the 70s and 80s. How does the school help with that kind of thing when, you know, I'm thinking that when children are in school, then, you know, I imagine there's IT policies which lock down certain websites and things like that. But of course, for a good chunk of the children's upbringing, they're not actually in school at all.
I think a big part of that comes from our curriculum. So we're trying to educate young people on how to keep themselves safe online. So it's quite interesting to look at in terms of us as adults, because we experience the internet in a very different way to the way that they experience the internet. So myself and Nicole actually ran a training session with parents at the start of this year. And one of the things we were talking about with them was the fact that actually a student's online presence and physical presence aren't two separate things. So for me, my online presence and my physical presence are two different things, but for them, it's intertwined, it's interlocked. They can't separate out from that because it is constant. It's with them all the time. And so when we talk to parents about online safety, when we talk to children about online safety, it's about not just don't do it, don't log on to that website, obviously certain websites don't log on to, but you can't tell them stop using social media because that's not realistic for them. So instead it's about teaching them and educating them on how to stay safe in that environment, as well as trying to talk more to parents about that and have more training sessions for parents and raising awareness in that area. So rather than just don't do this, this isn't healthy, because the world is different for them than it is for us. And I think it's a bit of a minefield for us to tread as well as educators in how to navigate that, because they know so much more than we do. I imagine it's even the same at JB. But when you've got 18, 19 year olds and you try and teach them about the internet, they often have a much better understanding of that than we do. So it's about trying to help them make the right choices for themselves and educating them in how to do that.
I think you brought up some really good points there, Rachel, because it can be quite easy, can't it, for adults to say, don't do this, because it's one of those things that an adult might not do. I remember when Snapchat was first launched, there was some concern over how people were using it. And I think it'd be quite easy for an adult to say to their child, don't use Snapchat. But if that child's friends are all using Snapchat, for example, then it's kind of, on the one hand, a bit unfair to force them to not use it. On the other hand, a little bit unrealistic as well, because children will sort of find a way around that themselves. So surely it's about sort of teaching them, like what you're talking about here, so that they are using social media, they're using the internet responsibly, as opposed to just locking it down and stopping them from doing it at all.
Yeah, definitely. And I imagine at JB, Nicole, it must be even harder because you've got children exposed to it for the very first time who must be like, oh my goodness, what is this world? I don't know how you even start to deal with that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, you know, when you look at the statistics, and we ran some training sessions for staff last year on online abuse. And, you know, children as young as 4 or 5 are exposed to digital media. They've got phones, they've got iPads. And, you know, it's, for me, it's about how do we in school support families and children that are accessing things, like you say, for the first time, coming across these things as a parent for the first time. It can be really scary. And also helping teachers to understand what their role is, because, it's the parents that give the children the devices that they have the access to all these different apps and sites on, and how can we work together to make sure that the children are learning to be responsible digital citizens and think about their footprint, because everything that they are doing these days, which is really scary, is leaving that footprint and that legacy for them as they move through their life. So it's rapidly changing world around us that we have to keep up with. But I think the main message from myself and from Rachel as well would be, you know, communication is key. You know, it's having open, transparent, honest conversations with the children and, you know, no judgments, just listening and trying to support as best you can.
Thank you for that, Nicole. Now, CPOMS, tell me what CPOMS is. Some people listening to this right now, they're thinking, CPOMS, gosh, what is that? Tell us a little bit about what CPOMS actually is.
So, yeah, so CPOMS is the Child Protection Online Management System that we have recently moved to. Rachel and I, very, very excited about the move that we made to this, because previously we were using systems that we just really weren't enabling an efficient workflow, and also weren't allowing us to really keep an eye on and monitor and track and bring everything together, the different pieces of the puzzle for children that were in our care. So it's where we report anything to do with pastoral concerns, any incidents that happen in school, but also it's our place of storage for child protection cases as well, where we can work on those and have very detailed case studies of what's happening.
Okay, and how do you get the balance right then between using something like this, which I imagine is very useful for sharing information between the people who should have access to that information regarding different people in school, some of the different students, but equally it not becoming some kind of, I'm not suggesting this would be the case in Alice Smith School at all, but some kind of gossip board where, you know, the wrong information can get into the wrong hands. How do you get that balance right?
So CPOMS is incredibly, incredibly secure. So I think we're actually possibly, by the sounds of things, the last school on earth who brought in CPOMS. So they have got years and years of experience of locking things down. And myself and Nicole spent, I'm not exaggerating by saying months, making sure that our settings were right for our community. So making sure that the right people have the right settings. And we're still monitoring and managing that. So we're having conversations weekly where we look at who's got access to level one concerns, for example. So level one is our lowest level of concern, which is behavior, well-being, for example, continually late to school or friendship issues. Level two is more sort of changing carer. So that will go to our heads of year, our heads of school. And then the very top level stuff, so anything that is what we've color coded as red on CPOMS, is a level three, and that only goes to our EP. It's myself and Richard, who's the deputy DSL. And then the primary campus, it goes to Nicole and the two heads of school there, the two deputies, Helen and Lynn. So it's very locked down in terms of where things go to. And the other thing is that part of our training sessions with staff is that we make it really clear that this does not replace the conversation. So this is a logging system. So write everything down that you know about a situation, but it does not replace the conversation. We still want those conversations to happen. If a level three incident is logged to myself and Nicole, we still go and have that conversation with the member of staff. It never remains simply on CPOMS. So it doesn't take away that human element. It just allows us to log and monitor and support our children in a much more effective and efficient way.
Okay. And Nicole, is that a similar approach that you take at the primary campus then?
Yes, so we have set this all up together. So it's one system for the whole school. So Rachel and I have worked very, very closely on, you know, what we need this to look like to work for both campuses, because we share the system. So yeah, everything that Rachel has said we're doing at our school, the primary campus, JB. And it's what's really interesting is that, you know, there's so much crossover, but it also facilitates lots of really interesting discussions between us, because we work closely together as DSLs anyway, but we might have things come up that staff have questions about the system, and we can sit down and talk it through together. And then it might be something that, you know, equally applies to some of the staff members on the primary campus as well. So I think, you know, it really is a very much a one school, whole school approach to safeguarding and managing the experiences of the children and how we consistently and effectively put things into place to support them.
And of course, this is all designed to protect the children, which is, you know, the primary importance of all of this. But equally, is there a way that this can help the schools with the school's purpose, you know, the sparking of courageous exploration?
Definitely. I mean, something that's come up this year in the Keeping Children Safe in Education, something they're highlighting massively, is about early intervention. So we've incorporated that into our training this year, But I imagine, Nicole, you're finding the same thing at JB, because it is so much easier for people to log an initial concern. They've got their device with them at all times. We're getting those things through so much more frequently. So those little, I've noticed this child is sitting by themselves. I've noticed this child is a little more withdrawn, and it's getting picked up on straight away, which allows our children to excel in school, because we can step in and we can have that early intervention. 9 times out of 10, it's nothing. But in that one instance that it is something, we can help that child as quickly as possible. So it fits in with the keeping children safe in education guidelines, but also for us as a school and trying to help our children be courageous explorers. We're giving the opportunity for them to do that, because we're able to step in so much more quickly than we would have been previously, because staff just have that quick, easy access to log something and log a concern.
And I think the what we found on that with the early help is the alerting process as well. So we know that there are vulnerable groups of children in school, and what we've been able to do is, you know, identify those groups as best we can, and make sure that the right people are getting alerted to incidents that come in for those children as soon as they come in. And it's been just amazing to see the conversations and things that are put in place so quickly that, you know, could possibly have taken a lot longer had we not had this system in place. So, you know, it's everything, every new system comes with its challenges, and I'm not saying that it's challenge free, but so far, you know, we're really, really pleased with what we're seeing.
Fantastic. Okay, so what's coming up in the future then?
What is coming up in the future? So I think for us, you know, we've spent a lot of time working on building a safeguarding culture in school. That goes back to when we were very fortunate enough to have Tim Gerrish come across and run an audit for us. He's a safeguarding consultant from the UK. And, you know, from that, we've worked very, very hard to enhance so many of our safeguarding procedures. So I think really for us moving forwards, you know, we're welcoming him back out again very soon, because our school does take safeguarding so very seriously. And we're really looking forward to celebrating the enhancements that we've made. But I know Rachel and I are chomping at the bit to see if he also can see what we can see that we want to move forwards with. I think, you know, more parental involvement is key. Workshops and communication, and, you know, how we continue to do that, thinking very strategically with all of our policies aligning and how we can develop those. I'm sure there's probably more, Rachel, if you want to add in some of our hopes for moving forward.
Just thinking about things that we've sort of started in the last maybe year or two that we're looking to continue. So we've been reaching out to, rather than being a standalone and institution, we've started reaching out. So we now have contacts in the police, in the local hospitals, in social services, so that when we need advice about the local context within Malaysia, we can get that quickly and easily. And those conversations were so beneficial, working with those local agencies, because obviously in the UK you have that set up already. Any school has that set up, and we didn't necessarily have that here until last year, and we're really starting to lean into that and utilize those connections. And in addition to that, we're trying to get the students more involved as well. So the year before last in term three, at secondary, we started a student safeguarding group, and they actually rewrote our safeguarding policy, to make it more understandable for students, make them feel like it was relevant to them. And they did a load of other work as well. So they were looking at making our toilets safer, our changing areas safer. They were looking at creating Zen rooms. And there's so much more work to happen there. And we're going to be setting another group up in term three of this year with students all the way from year 7 to 13. And I know, Nicole, you're looking at doing something similar at JB, at the primary campus, and just getting that student involvement. They're the ones who know if there is an unsafe area in school. They're the ones who know what they need. And so getting that student voice, and they are all very keen to talk. I have had so much sign up for that group over the last couple of years. I'm really excited to see what term three this year brings.
Well, there's clearly a lot of exciting things going on right now, exciting things in the future as well. If anyone's been listening to this, and if they had any questions about the whole safeguarding process at school, or maybe if they had an issue that they wanted to talk to either of you two about, what's the best way they should get hold of you?
I think just come and chat to us, to be honest. I mean, we are very visible in school. So I'm constantly running between the office and the classroom. And Nicole, I know you're out and about all the time between classrooms and on duties. I think just come and have a chat. We always love to talk safeguarding. We'll talk your ear off.
Excellent. That's really good to hear. So people can get in touch if they want to, if they've got any questions at all. That's great. We'll put links to the school in the show notes for anyone who's outside of the school as well. But in the meantime, Nicole and Rachel, it's been great talking to you both. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here, explaining how all of this works to us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Simon.
And a quick message for you, the listener. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast channel. We've got some awesome content coming out in the future and you wouldn't want to miss it. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.